the essential backers of Israel, without which it would be in a parlous situation. How this war will affect support for Israel in these countries, again, it's impossible to say. And there seems to be a trend in the United States and at least in Great Britain towards a deeper sympathy for the Palestinians and towards a greater unwillingness to give Israel the kind of blank check that American and British and European governments have traditionally given it. How that will work out is impossible to say.
And however it does work out, we'll continue to follow the war in Gaza here on Making Contact for the rest of this year. That was Rashid Khalidi talking about his book, The 100 Years War on Palestine, and that does it for today's show. If you'd like more information or want to leave a comment, visit us online at radioproject.org. I'm Salima Hamrani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The flowers are blooming, the birds are singing, and KBOO's spring membership drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th. Support Avant-Garde Airwaves.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurura and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the Air Room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the Air Room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes strike so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host, and what we'll hear tonight on tonight's program is a workshop from the Labor Notes Conference, the Troublemakers Wing of the Labor Movement in Chicago this past weekend, called Organizing for the Long Haul. The speakers include Jesse Sharkey from the Chicago Teachers, Denise Cabanella from SAG-AFTRA, Sin Huang from United Auto Workers and United Auto Workers for Democracy, Cecily Myatt-Cruz, United Teachers Los Angeles, and myself, Jamie Partridge, with the Democratic Socialists of America.
We are close to the time when we're going to throw it back to the room for thoughts. But before we do that, I just want to remind the panel, we've covered a little bit of ground here. We started by What Inspires Us. We thought a little bit about that as intergenerational. We talked a little bit about some obstacles, about the way people encounter the institution of the union. We talked about some tactics. Anything you want to say back to something you've heard, or just giving it another shot at the mic before we throw it up into the room?
I wanted to talk a little bit about how to help people get past disappointments and defeats, because we lose more than we win. And part of that, of course, is to take an historical view, but also to find a way to build in political education. And again, a lot of that is historical, but also, you know, how does the system work? And to find a home, an organization that can support you through the ups and downs. And for me, it's been a number of different organizations. It doesn't necessarily one that stays together forever. Labor Notes was a really important part, a kind of a home for me from the 80s on. But I've been also helped organize a Jobs with Justice chapter in our city, and currently it's the DSA. But you know, whatever it is, a support home for the folks that see themselves as in it for the long haul and in it to train others and to mentor the next generation.
I think it's about learning from other locals and other unions on how people continue to build power, how folks continue to march on the boss, how folks are using different tactics. And I think, that's something that I think UTLA really learned with Chicago as one of our closest allies, but also St. Paul. St. Paul was really honing in on community schools. Chicago was really talking about community schools, sustainable, you know, safety, all of those type of community schools. So when we were trying to, like, we were taking all the best ideas that we could find to really hone what UTLA was talking about. And when we're talking about the schools our students deserve, and you see that as a common mantra, you know, like we saw it in Chicago, we saw it in St. Paul, and then we, you know, took that mantra on and had a whole initiative like in 2013, and the current president at that time, 2013, just shelved that initiative on the schools Los Angeles students deserve. It passed our union, it went through our union 77%, and that president left it on the shelf. And so coming in 2014, we were like, that's what we're going to first draw on, because that will be the umbrella in which we do all of these other things. So I think, like, looking and taking and, you know, being able to share in this conversation, I think the things that, you know, SAG-AFTRA has done, I think the stuff Starbucks is doing, the stuff AFSCME has done with the academic workers, like just really trying to look at all of the landscape and then taking all of those parts and the lessons that they learned, right? Because we have lessons that we've learned along the way also to say, like, you might not want to do it like that on the next go around, right? And then trying to build our power from there. And so I thank all of the folks who we've been able to, UTLA has been able to learn from, and we're going to continue to learn and build and grow because it's about projecting that collective action and power.
We have a joke in the CTU, which is that they've stolen from us everything which we originally stole from them. Yeah. So if you're not doing that, you're doing something wrong. So yeah, share, borrow.
I just want to echo that, Cecily and Jamie, finding, you know, taking from your union, fellow union siblings. Is anyone here from the WGA in the room? Anyone? No. Okay.
We scared them off.
We, SAG-AFTRA, could not have gone as far as we did without our WGA siblings. They were so instrumental in helping us build the system that we were able to build during our strike, and they were able to take their captain system that they created and fostered over the last 15 years, and they were years ahead of us in terms of organization and communication. And so I know I was trying to talk with our WGA law coordinators every day to see what was working, what mistakes did you make, what are you learning right now, what can we do better, and we could not have done it without them. So I just want to shout our Writers Guild of America siblings out. And everyone who showed up for us on the line, Teamsters, Nina, IOTSI, we're seriously all in it together. Us, AMPTP.
Yeah, nice. I'm gonna ask people with that same spirit, and we'll take one more here and then we'll walk to the back to the audience. But yeah, what a great series of questions. What are we learning? What are we seeing? What are we still need to learn? What isn't going right? I Denise, you put it very well. That those are great questions for all of us.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's really incredible to be here. Just at LaborNet, this is my first conference, and I'm hoping to spend the rest of my life in the labor movement, be it many more. It's really special to be connected with many generations who've been part of the labor movement in different ways. And for me, what sustained me through this work, what keeps me in it, what keeps me inspired, is that drive to change the world, and really seeing, like, we, you know, in our workplaces and across, and the students who are also organizing at the City University of New York, CUNY, there's a lot of problems of underfunding and under attack. People all across the country are really coming together and trying to change things for the better, and I think it's, you know, working people who have that power. And so I'm inspired. I want to be a teacher, in part, yes, because I want to connect with the kids and make an impact, but also because I think it's really urgent in New York City. I think it's the largest union local period in the United States, the UFT. And one of the most important, you know, teachers have so much power, and there's a lot of work ahead in UFT, and there's a reform effort, a reform movement there that I want to be a part of. And to take these lessons from student worker organizing to Starbucks, and they're different. They have, you know, I want to win on the immediate things as a student worker at Starbucks, but the connection is how we can bridge those experiences. And I think what I wanted to focus on today is these questions of, like, beyond just the legal system or the sort of bureaucratic system of, like, the contract and the election, like, how do we build the power in our workplaces and understand where our power comes from? And I want to take that forward as a teacher and sort of just continue to be inspired by connecting with, you know, different activists here. And so, yeah, it's been great to talk. Yeah.
I realized that Sin got left off this final round and has a thought.
Yeah, on the subject of how to sustain ourselves, Jamie and Cecily talked a lot about the importance of linking up with like-minded people in the labor movement, which Labor Notes is very much about. I think one of the places where that insight that, you know, they brought up is most resonant is in the UAW, where UAWD, a network of, you know, reformers that was very small and scrappy, you know, helped win direct elections in the union, elected a new reform-minded leadership, and is also working to build a new culture of democracy and militancy on the ground. Many people on the panel have talked about the ways that society throws up barriers to collective, you know, power and solidarity. Sometimes our organizations do the same. You know, the whole reason why we organize in the first place is because society makes us feel powerless, you know, unappreciated, disrespected. You know, how are we supposed to change that dynamic if sometimes our, you know, we feel similarly in our unions? And so it's really important, you know, to connect with people who might feel isolated or alienated, who you know, have this instinct that things can be better ultimately, to link up with them and figure out, you know, ways to make our unions better. And yeah, you know, that's the instinct that has propelled a lot of the major transformations that we're seeing in the labor movement. That's what Labor Notes is all about, empowering the bottom-up forces of the labor movement, you know, connecting all of us here today to make unions that can, you know, not only fight for economic justice, but, you know, transform society as well. So
thank you. Okay, so let's hear some thoughts.
In very specific conditions, so Starbucks and the union are getting to the table now, and I think it's connected the fact that, like, now I've been at Starbucks for a while, almost 2 years, and there was a while back when I was talking to a coworker, we were going to do something, and form a union, she left. And I think just the ground moving and becoming like, this is possible, like, felt like for a long time the idea of a contract was an idea, not a reality. The idea of we could get fired, we could get the store shut down. There's a lot shifting now, like with the company and the union working together, like our elections can be expedited. What's lost in that process? Is there anything, you know, caveats and concessions we should look out for? But I do think it helps that, you know, the labor movement is on fire, that most young people are pro-union. And you have to go beyond just like sentiment. Like, you can say 71% of whatever polls say something, but like, and yes, my coworkers might say yes, but what does it take to get them involved in the work? You know, some people, just grounding this in my experiences recently, like someone was like, yes, I'll do this, I'll join the OC, and then stepped away, and someone's like, down, but I can't be on the OC. So like, really being committed to doing the work, I think I'm still figuring it out in my context. But I do think it really helps that, like, in the political economic sense, there's definitely big support for unions, and that, like, workers have the power right now. So I think we have to hold on to that as much as we can, and get ready for what's coming after. So yeah, just seize the moment, I guess, as a general platitude.
As a person who's been around for a minute, I have a thought about this, which is that, you know, I started doing labor union work in 1988 and had my first union job and took a full-time staff job in 92. And that was a whole long period when there was very little strike activity and pretty abysmal in a lot of ways. And one of the things it meant was that in order to sustain yourself, you had to read and understand a lot. I've read a lot of politics. I've read Marx. I've read trade union theory. I've read, you know, Mike Davis on the last time they tried to organize, you know, Operation Dixie and the Prisoners of the American Revolution, you know. It meant that to participate in a bunch of stuff, to stay in there, you had to have a develop a high level of politics, and that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a bad thing because of, oh, you have to, what have you read in order to participate? No, now people just participate because it's cool and other people are doing it, and there's a movement and people want to participate in it because it feels relevant. But the downfall of that is if you don't take the time to develop your own analysis of the way the world works, you have the danger of falling back in moralism. And what's happening is that we're getting really hard political questions, like the political questions around bring Chicago home. And here's one: there's a big migrant crisis in Chicago. Texas has bused 39,000 somebody, basically homeless migrants, to Chicago, and has produced migrant crisis. It's a housing crisis, really, but it's a housing crisis that, like, a bunch of conservative people are pitting against the undocumented. It's like black community versus Latino community. And if you don't have some politics to sort that out and explain that to people, you are unable to make the arguments that are required to do to lead and put them and set the movement forward. You wind up getting really nasty divisions and whatnot. So to me, just like that would be a lesson, is that for people coming in, I would say, you know, be inspired by the fact that there's way more strike activity, there's exciting organizing drives and whatnot, but don't forget to take the time to learn politics, to read something, to pay attention, to develop your own leadership, because you're going to need some solidness in order to get through when things start to get confusing.
If you just tuned in, we're listening to Labor Radio, KBOO Portland, and a workshop held last weekend in Chicago at the Labor Notes Conference, the troublemakers wing of the labor movement, called Organizing for the Long Haul. KBOO is community-sponsored, listener-supported, not corporate radio, community radio, and we depend on listener support to keep going. You can go to kboo.fm and make a donation. Are you a member of the working class? Well, join KBOO and become an owner. Join the owning class. Every one of the 5,000 members owns a piece of KBOO, KBOO. Once you join, you're a different person. You get to vote for the board, serve on committees, volunteer to gather news, or put on your own show. Join the owning class now. Go to kboo.fm. Make the world a better place. Think about joining KBOO like joining a union. It's a choice. It's an open shop. You can benefit from the information, the tools, the inspiration KBOO provides, and you can be a free rider, or you can join your sisters and brothers in solidarity to build a stronger, more effective voice for social change. It's up to you. Join now. KBOO.fm. Make a donation.
Sustainability and being in this for the long haul. We want to have the people who support us, right? I also want to, and I'm not saying this because I'm from LA, self-care is to know when our battery is at 20% so that we can, you know, change the speed at which we're crashing and take care of ourselves better. Know who your people are, who have your back, who can keep you accountable to, you know, keeping you well and also keeping you focused on the things that y'all are working on. I have my, I call her my organizing wife, Cheyenne Perez, who I worked a lot on the line with, and we did everything together. And if you have even just that one person, just one person who can help support you, that really, really helps. And knowing your resources for SAG-AFTRA, the Entertainment Community Fund, formerly known as the Actors Fund, the SAG Foundation, the Motion Picture and Television Community Funds, they all have funds if you need help, grants, emergency assistance. Those kinds of things matter, and I think that the more that we share that in our communities, the more supported people will feel. But self-care, find your support home. We're in it for the long haul.
I just wanted to add a few more elements to the surviving over the long haul, which I found, and with folks that I work with, that's really helpful, is when the upsurges happen, like they're happening right now, even though you have a sense, an historical sense, that it can't last, really, this revolution is not going to happen in my lifetime. However, take joy and love it while it's happening. I mean, I'm just so thrilled with the pro-Palestine movement. It just reminds me of the anti-war movement during the Vietnam era. It's just like, wow, look what's happening at Columbia University right now. And have fun. And, you know, it's okay to take joy in disrupting business as usual. You know, I mean, to tap into that anti-authoritarian mood that all of us have. But the other aspect of the long haul, I think, is to take lessons from the oppressed minorities in our culture that have developed a culture of resistance, like the Native American folks, the indigenous folks, indigenous folks, like the black folks, like the migrant communities in our, in our country, who have figured out through all kinds of methods, whether it's the music and the dance, or the ways of holding together when the oppressor comes at you, that we all can learn from.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is just taking these experiences, having the capacity to reflect on what we achieved, what we won, and what we should have done differently, which we only can know through the experience and having a group of people win or lose that are able to look back, you know, years ago or within recent months of a strike or a given fight and really reflect and then take those lessons and express them, you know, writing those articles about your shop floor fights or just having the conversations and building the networks. I think that's one of the big values of Labor Notes. And we built something sort of kind of inspired by that for the undergraduate student worker movement, trying to, you know, collectivize these lessons and take our accumulated experiences and hold on to them. I think right now for me, you know, this long haul sustainability, I am going to be driven and motivated to go where I go because of the politics, because of the desire to change the world that I think resonated for me of, like, you know, thinking about what's going on, the best, you know, decisions we can make to make the impact where we have the most power. And I'm in the coming years going to be hopefully beginning a career as a teacher, and I'll need to come back to that. But then I'm in this process now of building a union, and, you know, everybody is mad at the company, mad at Starbucks, feels very clearly agitated and is pro-union, and now it's work, and I want to think about how to consider, like, make it fun, make it a celebration to come together, really build these relationships, but also, like, sometimes we have to schedule one-on-ones, and we have to, like, people have kids and families and lots on their plate, and people are stepping back, and how we frame it to people of, like, you know, you really need to commit and follow through and do your tasks versus, like, making it, not like lying to people, but being like, okay, it's just going to be talking to this one person, can you do that? Meeting people where they're at, but also trying to push them in some way, which honestly is uncomfortable because you ask them, hey, can you do this? And they say no, and how you figure out how to reframe that or find the thing they can work on. So where I'm sitting is, like, I'm going to be motivated, and there's a couple people on our organizing committee that seem to be in a similar place of, like, they're really down, and they're feeling frustrated with our coworkers right now who are like, well, I'll support and I'll vote yes, but, like, you do it. And so I think that's the big question for me right now. If people are not in that place of, like, I'm going to do this and we're going to change the world together and this is that big higher purpose, you know, how do we tap into their, beyond just their issues and what they care about, that sense and that spirit of solidarity and care, it's going to get them to show up and, you know, talk to their coworkers, build a strong union together. So that's a big open question for me right now is, like, you know, where you find that sense for people who are, you know, not necessarily like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life and I'll be at Starbucks forever, but they just want to, like, you know, they want to do it, but they're having trouble stepping into it. Yeah.
Yeah,
it would be. For concluding thoughts, I mean, I guess the reason why I'm on this panel is not because I'm the most scholarly read, or not, it's also not because I'm the most experienced union veteran. I think I'm on here because I reflect broader transformations that have been taking place in the working class. You know, my path into the labor movement wasn't that I was a union member first. I first got involved in political organizing because of Bernie Sanders campaigns, because I saw mass strikes by teachers and nurses, and important social movement struggles like BLM, and I think that's true of a lot of people of my generation. There's been a huge shift in consciousness, and I think that's presented massive opportunities. You know, a person over there asked, you know, what we can make of those opportunities, and one concrete thought I had is that, you know, for a lot of people my age, especially people who are about to graduate college, you know, they're, you know, thinking what to do with my life. You know, I want to do something socially useful, and the natural path or the common sense for a lot of people is, you know, maybe I just join, like, a progressive NGO, or, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, I think because of this massive, you know, political shift that we're seeing, we have a lot of room, you know, to approach these people and say, hey, we could use your enthusiasm, your wisdom, your spark in the labor movement. So, you know, that's kind of the impetus for this organization that I introduced at the beginning, the Rank and File Project, which is trying to meet and cohere these people and convince them to join the labor movement and build a new, you know, bottom-up democratic militant left-wing labor movement. So I think that's one major opening that I see right now. And I don't think I have any special insights to impart. I very much see myself as having the privilege of laying another brick in the wall. You know, spaces like Labor Notes and this panel is all about collectivizing the wisdom that we have, you know, not because we don't have the power to change anything as individuals. We have the opportunity to look to history, to look to, you know, organizers abroad, and to look to each other for ways to you know, change the world. And I'm really thankful that I get to hear from, you know, movement elders about, you know, things that they've seen in the past, what went well, what didn't go well, stuff like that. And maybe that was the wrong choice of words.
I'm gonna own that actually.
Yeah, I mean, having this community, you know, doesn't necessarily make us immune to defeats, but it definitely gives me the confidence to keep going no matter what happens. So I'm really grateful.
Yeah, nice. Before I pass the mic to Cecily, I just want to say that, you know, as a person who's made a life of work in the labor movement, first as a union staffer, and then I decided that, you know, to do it as a rank and file member, I would say that it's been extraordinarily fulfilling work and important, and want to urge people to think about the fact that the working class and all of its multi-gendered and multi-racial glory is the one sort of force in society that has both an interest in fundamental change in the system and potentially at least the means to do that, because we represent the vast majority of people. And so, yeah, absolutely. If there's people considering this as work or looking for that inspiration and continue doing it after a lifetime of it, let me add in my encouragement.
I appreciate that conversation, and thank all of you for coming to the panel as well. I think one of the key takeaway pieces is finding joy in the resistance. You have to be able to find the joy. I'm always searching for the self-care. I'm not really good at it, but I'm drawing that from you, so I'm gonna try to keep that in my mantra. Finding your people, absolutely. And guess what? Y'all are all our people, right? That's why we're here in this movement. As we're talking to folks in the public sector and private sector, as we're turning them on to union work, remember, 80% listening, 20% talking, because you will turn off folks as fast. Building the movement will only move at the speed of trust. So that is that piece. And again, finding the joy in the resistance and always leading by example and really looking at folks like Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, that can draw strength. So I'm always drawing strength from my ancestors. Thank you.
And thank all of you. Thank you for a great panel, a great discussion. I look forward to seeing you guys all around.
That wraps it up for this evening's program. You've been listening to KBOO Labor Radio and Organizing for the Long Haul, a workshop at the Labor Notes Conference in Chicago this past weekend. This has been Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30.